Welcome to Starfleet Universe Encore. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I've been at SFB online, then come online and Starfleet Warlord. Just mind how to join us. We have Talkcast every Thursday starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone to start 605-562-0444 to follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk's website at www.talkshow.com and search for call ID 17702 or Starfleet Universe on call, or SFU on call. Actually, I don't think SFU on call works, but Starfleet Universe on call will definitely work. I know that for a fact. And of course, if you want the best online experience where you want to go to, you want to go to twitch.tv. That's twitch.tv/SFU on call, and you will find us there. You will join us in the chat room. Hopefully, you will hear us. Had some technical difficulty last week, and I didn't realize until later in the podcast, really late in the podcast, and I apologize for that. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you'll follow me on the Twitters. You can follow either my SFU on call account, or it's my podcasting on my personal account, which is Paul Franz, or you can also go to Franz Games, FRANZGAMES. There's no T in that, and that's my business account. Now, of course, we are also on Blue Sky. So we have, of course, the stuff SFU on call account, which is sfuoncall.bsky.social. And, of course, the franzgames.com account, which is my personal and also my business account there on Blue Sky. And, of course, the lovely Talkcast. Get to the podcast, available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. So quick news from ADB. Does ADB, not much actually going on. They did have some meetings and so forth, but the big news is that they survived the dust storm that ran through Amarillo. So everyone's good, everyone's fine. So we're all good to go there. Okay, this week on Found Online Store, we have the FedCom Deluxe Space Battle Maps. Now this, all these battle maps are total are $84.95, and I'm sure you go, that's a lot of money. For cardboard, well, no, it's cardboard, and that's why it's priced so much. But there's eight panels there, not just one or two. It's eight panels for you can use for either our Starfleet Battle Federation Commander, Honor Harrington, Attack Vector, or other space games. Full color Hubble telescope map images, numbered hex for game recording, always a good thing. Some panels have the usual fire direction and scatter diagrams for you. And there's also two panels that have full color planets by Ted Gebel. And also each panel is double-sided. It includes a 5/8 inch or a 16 millimeter, or on the, which is, you know, the standard SFB scale. And then there's the 1 1/4 inch or 32 millimeters hexes on the other side, which is the normal Federation Commander scale. The panels are separate, not hinged, so you can build your own battle map, leapfrog ahead of a running gunfight. Six of these panels are in Federation Commander Klingon border, and two planets ones are in Federation border Klingon attack. That doesn't make sense. How many of those? I'm just confused. Okay, I'm moving on forward to the actual. We have the SFB Online tournaments. We have, of course, the 500 BPV tournament. I've finished mine, which you all know if you've been listening, because I finished mine up last week. And we actually went through it. Also, the Sapphire Star 18 tournament, they were supposed to have their game on Sunday. I did not check to see if there was any results of that. I apologize there. But there's also Peter Bakia and Jack Taylor are busy working on their 12th turn for a 500 BPV game, which is, it actually looks like it's been a really good game with Gorns versus Klingons. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to, Okay, there's not much happening. Other places, there's a when it comes to online client stuff, there's an issue which I'm now right now looking into. I'm not sure what happened. I need to investigate. This is one that's gonna it's gonna require me to go pretty deep, just because of the looks like the ship, the stuff that's behind it, as you see on that beautiful ship. Behind it, some of the structures are not quite what they're supposed to be. They're not initialized the way they're supposed to be. I'm not sure how it happened. And that's why I need to figure it out so that I can fix it for the person who is trying to run a game. And I need to do that ASAP. Don't worry, I will be working on that particular item on this weekend. And I'm hoping to possibly get an update out the door for some of the operating systems, because it takes like 4 hours to get to go through all the operating systems. Hopefully I'll be able to do that this weekend. But anyway, moving on forward, there were a couple of Klingon ships that got fixed and a couple of Lingerns. Both of those have been uploaded. Also, for the FedCom Library, I did receive the FRD definitions from Chris Newsy, so hopefully I can get those on the client, sorry, in the library, so people can use them, especially Seth, who actually asked for them. So with that is the news for this week. It's me, yes, the only old Paul Franz, welcoming you to Star from the Universe on call. And tonight we have Gary. Say hi, Gary.
Hi, Gary.
And we have Mr. Doug Howard. How you doing, Doug?
Hey, I'm here. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, doing good. Okay, then me. So give me a sec here. I always forget. There. Oops, and gotta make sure to get rid of the sound. Okay. Hi. Always a setup. I know. Maybe it's not quite on. Maybe not as professional as some people are, but it's me. So.
So like tonight we won't be like figments of some of other people's imaginations then.
Probably
Hopefully.
not. I'll have to
Okay.
wait and see.
Yay.
Okay. Gary had a topic for this evening. He had me bring up Capitol number 51, which is with the FNEs, one of the parts of that is the Carnivans. So I'm assuming we're going to be talking about the Carnivans a little bit.
Okay, so in the not like recently, I guess, while things have been other things have been going on at ADB, because all the attention on the VBS has been at the 500 point tournament, which is all well and good. It's great to see that it's being such a big success. Hopefully the Carnivans and Paravians will be in the mix for round two. But one thing I was thinking of is so as you know, Module C6 basically presents modern ships for both the Paravians and Carnivans, as well as a set of alternate timelines to allow people to actually use these ships. And similarly, when Module R4J came out, it basically provided a bunch of Shadow of the Eagle timelines, which allowed you to use the early warped Romulans that have the SSDs in that book. And of course, one of those timelines is actually the same, one of the same, is the same as one of the timelines for the Paravians in Module C6. So on the BBS, in the new product development section, there's the potential for additional C modules. So one of the modules could be Module C6R, which basically provides more ships for the Paravian Carnivals. And then another one could be a Module C7, which could basically take the playtest Borak and Teledyne ships and flesh them out to full campaign status and then give you those. And so I was thinking basically it would be handy either in C6R or in C7 or maybe in both. It would be a good opportunity to give people or to think about whether or not there could be even additional timelines that would allow these units to actually function and for people to be able to, use them in game terms. So that's why I wanted you to bring up the map that's in Kepler's log 51.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if you want, we can start with the Carnivon, since that's the one that we've got here.
I think that's
the current module C. Yeah,
it's a good place to start because we have
in
it.
The current module C6.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly right. So the map you see in front of you is based on one of the two timelines that's offered in module C6 for the Carnivons. The idea being that they managed to unify rather than being separate hordes, and therefore they managed to survive into the modern era. And then there's a second map that's not here, but it's in module C6 itself, which basically shows a Carnivon force that takes over the wind cluster, and then they burst onto the map during the General War and seize territory from the surrounding empires. So that's the cluster Carnivons, whereas this one is the Carnivon Empire, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for a theoretical module C6R. Now, speaking of Captain's Log 51, so in that same book that you've got up on the screen now, a few pages before, there's a playtest scenario. But personally, I think the scenario is kind of awkward, because the scenario that's offered basically has the Carnivons ally with the Klingons and the Lyrans to fight the Xintis. But it has these rules called uneasy coalition, which basically prevents the Lyrans and Carnivons from being true allies because they still hate each other.
Right.
And so there's certain things that they can't transfer economy points, and they can't be, you know, these are, you know, XYZ things, whatever. That's. But I personally think that the concept of the uneasy coalition is an interesting one, but mm-hmm. I don't think it works if the two empires have a direct border with each other. Because if you look at the map, it looks really tempting for a border fleet on either side to go at each other. And then any plans the Klingons might have might go right out the window.
Yeah.
So, what I was thinking was, so back in Captain's Log 38, there was a scenario for F&E, which called Altered Alliances. And that scenario basically offered a version of the Four Powers War, where the Klingons were actually allied with the Xintis, not the Lyrans. So you had an alliance of Lyran and Hydran versus a coalition of Xinti and Klingon. And this meant basically that different border fleets were in different positions and so on. And so, for example, the Lyrans, they weren't using the enemy's blood fleet against the Hydrans. They were using the foremost fleet against the Lyrans, that sort of thing. And similarly, the Klingons were basically, their fleets were kind of aligned to attack the Lyrans rather than the Hydrans. Well, rather than the Xintis, because they would still fight the Hydrans, of course. So I was thinking that here, it might make sort of more sense, at least in terms of game balance, to have the Klingons and the Carnivons be the allies. And then you could basically use those uneasy coalition rules, turn them into uneasy co-belligerent rules for the Lyrans and the Xintis. So even though the Xintis and the Lyrans are both fighting the coalition, they still hate each other. So they're not, but because they don't border each other directly, the wind cluster's in the way, they're basically fighting separate wars against the Klingons and Carnivons. And then if you throw the Hydrans into the mix as allies of the Lyrans, you've got a five powers war. So the first alternate timeline I had in mind was basically, as you say, as just said, it'd be a five powers war with the Klingons and the Carnivons versus the other three.
Hmm. Yeah, the one thing I'm thinking about is how well the idea of an uneasy coalition works where you don't have a shared border. Because I would think,
if you want to see the rules, okay.
Yeah, I'm bringing up the rules.
Yeah, just a few pages back. It's six. Right. Yeah, my eyes are gone screwy. 6HW.23 on easy coalition.
Right.
And it basically explains what you can or cannot do. So if you want to read it out, for the our good listeners to be able to hear,
mm-hmm.
feel free.
Sure. It says the Lyrans and Carnivons had a history of war with one another prior to diplomatic efforts, by the Klingons. They had every reason to distrust one another. However, prior to the start of the war, the Klingon diplomats convinced the Konovans to join them in the conquest of the Zinnis, hegemony. Promising a share in the territory, the Konovans accepted the offer after the Klingons secured a co-belligerency pact with the Lyrans and the Konovans. That was guaranteed by the Klingons. The impact of the pact provisions are as follows. Movement. Lyrans and Konovans may not move together using Operation Movement. They may occupy the same hexes and react normally to enemy movements together. They cannot voluntarily enter each other's own original territory unless it is not under the original owner's control. Humans that find themselves trapped within the other's controlled territory are considered to be out of supply. They may not retrograde to the points controlled by the others, and they cannot use each other's strategic movement nodes or allowances. Diplomatic and medical ships' movement is unaffected. And also in combat, Lyran and Carnivine...
Just to clarify, sorry to jump in. Just to clarify, if you go back to the map for a second, strategic movement nodes refers to any of the bases or planets that you see on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you're using a tug, there's tugs have a mission where they can become a temporary strategic movement node, so they can basically extend your supply grid into enemy territory. So in this case, it was basically, you can see the intent of the scenario is to make it more awkward for the Lyrans and Carnivans to be on the same side in terms of like where you can actually have them on the map functioning.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
But yeah, that's it.
Okay, go back for the movement for a moment. Okay, so that's the weird part to me is they cannot voluntarily enter each other's original territory unless it is not under the control of the original owners, under the control of the original owner, basically. Which means that the Konovans can't enter Lyran territory unless the Lyran territory that they're entering is no longer owned by the Lyrans. Which is...
That's right.
Okay. I can kind of understand that.
I promise not to invade you while it's still your place.
Right.
But if the neighbor that we hate takes it over, I'm coming in. Ha ha ha. There you go.
Exactly. Combat. Lyran and Carnivine units cannot appear together in the same battle force for one another unless a minimum force requirements would compel them to do so. If any Klingon units are present, they must be first to avoid any commingling of Lyran and Carnivine units in the same battle force. In the multi-system hexes, they may each attack separate systems if forced to appear together. Lyran and Carnivine units cannot form a co-mingled battle group or serve as consorts for one another. If pursued, the crippled forces may appear together, but uncrippled units of the pursued force may not. They cannot form a commingled pursuit force. Okay.
In the historical timeline, certain allies like Lyrans and Klingons, they by the time of the General War, at least, it's not quite as developed in the Four Powers War, but they basically have kind of advantages that they can have if you basically mix them together in a fleet, and so a kind of synergies, as you could say. But the idea here is to basically try to eliminate or at least minimize that happening between the Lyrans and Carnivans.
Understood. Yeah, obviously, there's a lot of things they can't do. They can't repair each other's ships. Economics empires cannot transfer funds or conduct diplomatic trade or exchange commercial convoys with each other. Reserves, the Lyran and Carnivan units cannot form reserves with units of the other empire. And the reserve forces may move to free up each other's reserves if needed. Now,
even with all that in mind, I still think it's not quite, doesn't quite fit right for the Carnivals and Lyrans. But I do think that if you look at that map and have it the Lyrans and Kzinti, because think about it like this. The Klingons have the largest navy, by far.
Right.
The Carnivals are relatively weak. But in any case, if you're looking at that map, if you're the Coalition, the number one thing you want to do is seize the territory around the Wind Cluster.
Right.
Because you want to keep the Lyrans and Kzintis away from each other, and you also want to make it easier to attack the Wind Cluster if you decide to go for it later on. And you also want to make sure that by the time of the General War, because in the historical timeline, the Klingons have survey ships, but they actually lease territory off-map through the Lyran Firestar Zone. But if they're not allied with the Lyrans, then they need to send those ships into the Carnivon remote regions instead. So to get those ships over, they'd need to have a clear supply path. And to do that, you need to start conquering some border provinces. So if you think about it like this, if you change those rules to apply to the Kzintis and Lyrans, they're probably going to spend most of the war afar from each other anyway, because they're going to have to basically try to push back to the pre-war border to get rid of the Carnivon and Klingon forces that are in that area. So even if they were in proximity near the end of the war, then these rules would only basically kind of help them get back to the pre-war status quo, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that that would actually function a lot better, thematically speaking, than the current setup where it's the Carnivons and the Lyrans. Does that make sense? Or
understood.
Does that still seem like it might be a problem?
No, but understood. It definitely alleviates the issue with each other's territory is as much because of, in the case of the Lyrans and the Zinnis, you have them basically on opposite catacombs from one another. The only thing, so the only way to get any kind of support, would be going around the Wind Cluster. That's, as be honestly, I don't understand the Wind Cluster as a movement. My assumption is that you have to go around the Wind Cluster unless you want to actually attack inside the Wind Cluster. Do I have that correct?
So, in Fed and Empire terms, most scenarios basically treat the Wind Hex as impassable.
Right.
The idea being that, yes, you only go in there. Now, the Wind Cluster itself is only 50 parsecs across, so it's actually relatively small inside that hex. Most of the hex is not the Wind Cluster. But only the ISC, when they're doing the peacekeeping mission, do they basically get to go through, bypass the Wind Cluster to get to the other neutral zone hexes. Other empires basically have to treat the Wind Hex as like a fulcrum around which to fight.
Right.
But there is actually some Win cluster counters that are in Fed and Empire now, and also Tactical Operations has a scenario where you can invade the Win cluster. So it is quite possible that if things are going pretty well for the Coalition in this case, or if the Kzintis and Lyrans manage to fight their way back, that somebody could try to invade the Wins if they want to. So that is definitely a possibility. But I think it's more likely that the Klingons be the ones to do it, because they're probably going to be the ones who'd have the strength to be able to keep the others far enough away that they'd be able to take a shot at them. So, but basically, for most terms, you're going around the Wind Cluster unless your intention is to invade it itself.
Okay, that's right. That's what I thought. I just want to make sure that I understood what the Wind hex when it comes to movement and other things means. And basically it's the big rock that you can't, a big wall, you can't go through that hex. It's almost like a black hole. And to a certain degree it kind of is. Can you imagine actually sending a fleet into the Wind Cluster?
And it doesn't come back.
Yes. Exactly. Because you have to penetrate into the Wind Cluster, and that's usually fraught with danger. So it's kind of the same thing. But anyway.
It's fraught with peril and not the peril that you want.
True. So the...
Now, there are still a few additional balance issues that kick in here. So one of them is that if you look at that map and you compare it to the historical map, you'll notice that the Lirans are missing four provinces because the Carnivons are there.
Right.
So, and also you'll notice that the northern starbase that the Lirans have is in a different hex. It's a different province even.
Mm-hmm.
So technically that's Apex County. It's not Redclaw County. So you know how if you look at Module C1, it tells you what all the Liran counties are. So, and also which province is the Duke's province, and which ones are the counts. So the way it works is that the counts control the border bases, the dukes control the star bases, and the king emperor controls the homeworld, the homeworld province, actually, and including the various planets in the capital head. So because there's four fewer provinces, this basically would mean that there's 20, because another thing as well is that you might remember how if you look at the LDR and the Liran Empire, the Liran feudal structure is set up so that every county provides one heavy cruiser, one light cruiser, a destroyer, a frigate, and then a few other things like police ships and stuff. So if you subtract four provinces, that means you've got 20 fewer ships to start the war with.
Wow.
And it also means that you have to shuffle them around, because if you look at the historical orders of battle, at least the ones for the General War and the Four Powers War, the Liran enemy's blood fleet is actually short four ships. And the reason why is because the LDR exists. Because the LDR, both ships are in the LDR. And that means that there's one fewer province that the enemy's blood duchy has compared to the other duchies. In this timeline, because the way the map is set up, if you subtract the LDR, that actually means that... but on the other hand, if the Hydrans are allied to the Lirans, then what's happening, because, okay, stop me if I'm mixing it up here.
Sure.
In the historical order of battle, like if you look on the BBS, you can actually bring up a PDF that shows you the general war order of battles, like different empires, like the Klingons and Lirans and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the abstractions is that the counties that represent the foremost duchy, the ones that are in the middle of a Liran empire, they are combined with the homeworld fleet. And they can be sent to either the Khazinti border or the Hydran border. Now, in this timeline, because foremost is a border fleet facing the Klingon Empire, or would be, that means that enemy's blood fleet is the one that has to be sent to the homeworld to combine with the homeworld fleet. But because the LDR is there, then enemy's blood would actually be missing those ships.
Right.
And conversely, foremost would actually have more ships to start the campaign with, because it would have more provinces than enemy's blood has, if that makes sense. But you'd still have to rearrange the provinces. So instead of, because like in the historical timeline, each duchy has, with the exception of enemy's blood, each duchy has five provinces, like the duchy province itself, plus four counties. But here you've got four fewer counties, so maybe it's only four instead of five, which means enemy's blood only has three instead of four. So you are reducing the number of ships, but you're also rearranging it so that you're actually taking ships away from the home fleet and giving them to the foremost fleet so that they're on the border when the Klingons show up. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the second thing is, now there aren't any Maulers in Module C6, but there could be Maulers in Module C6R. But in this timeline, if the Klingons are allied to the Carnivons, then that means that the Carnivons will be the ones to get the Maulers. But it means that the Lirans don't get Maulers. So you'd basically have an excuse to use new SSDs for Carnivon Maulers. So that itself is not that big a deal.
Right.
But the trick is, if you look at the carriers that Liran ships have in Starfleet battles,
right,
they use Klingon fighters.
Right.
So if the Klingons aren't the ones to give them the fighters, who are? And I have a couple of ideas about that, actually. Because you know how the Lirans conquered the Paladine?
Yes.
Well, the Palladyne simulators have fighters in them. And so those simulators are designed to be buildable. Like, they're not intended to be. They're basically the ships that the Palladyne would have built had they survived as an empire.
Right.
So maybe the Lyrans could just use Palladyne fighters.
Hmm.
The drone ones, not the plasma ones.
Right.
And that's it, because you basically use the same SSDs for the actual carriers. But you then open up module D4 and go to the page where it basically has like a squadron of the drone-armed Palladyne fighters, and that's them. And then, now the problem is that the heavy fighters that the Palladyne use have plasma torpedoes as well as drones, and I do not want the Lyrans to get plasma. So I would just say that by the time that happens, the Lyrans just double down on fast patrol ships, because they're the first in the Alpha Octant to build them anyway. So you basically never use heavy fighters in this timeline for the Lyrans. Mm-hmm. They get the size one drone fighters, the Palladyne designed, then they move directly to PS.
That makes sense.
And there'd be a couple of changes that you'd need for the Klingons and the Kzintis. Like, for example, you'd have to give the Klingons an additional border fleet, because they'd need one to cover the Lyrans and to cover the Hydrans. So they'd probably need to steal ships from the Mothball Reserve, or the Imperial War Reserve as well. So if you look at the order of battle, the Klingons have a whole ton of ships that are sitting in Mothballs that they can basically activate as the war progresses. But in this timeline, some of those ships are already in use because they're needed to protect so many hostile borders. But if the war goes on too long, then the Klingons might start running out of things in the cupboard to take out to help them.
Right.
So it's kind of like a rob Peter to pay Paul sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever the Klingon equivalent names would be. And the final thing for this timeline would be that the Kzintis also lose a couple of provinces because the Carnivores are in the way.
Right.
But for the Kzintis, it's not that big a deal. So what I would suggest is basically give them two more provinces in the off-map zone, the Barony. But that means that a few of the frigates from the homeworld fleet, they actually start the game in the Barony, in the off-map Baron fleet set. So the Kzintis get the same number of ships, but they're just slightly adjusted in terms of where on the order of battle they are. And that might not seem like a lot, but the Kzintis have a comparatively weak fleet already, so I don't know if it's a good idea to start chipping away at their order of battle the same way, because with the Lyrans you can't really help it, because their history is tied so closely to the way that their provinces are set up. So
right,
they have some ships.
Right. And,
but the Kzintis,
well, and the political structure is, it sounds like it, you know, with the, you know, with having the Dukes and the and so forth, and how that politically, you know, make, you know, works, because I'm basically, in my mind anyway, I'm not sure if this is truly the case, but it sounds like for the Lyrans that the reason why you give, you know, you send basically these ships to the home world is basically as tribute to the king, you know, and that also makes the whole overall Lyran empire stronger, you know.
Well, the way it usually works is that the Lyran emperor himself, he's able to commission barons and marshals to fly ships like war cruisers and battle cruisers and so forth, and their fealty is directly to him. But some of the other ships still are crewed by representatives from the various duchies and counties. So they're just kind of combined for the sake of the empire. But when the war's over, they go back to their home provinces if they haven't been destroyed by them.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there's another civil war, then they end up fighting each other.
Remind me.
Oh yeah, and then the final thing would be for the Winds in LDR, they'd get a few extra toys. Like, for example, the Winds would get access to disruptor cannons, the same as the Orion Cluster Cartel. And the LDR, the Winds would probably get another monitor, because they usually, historically, they get three. And this timeline, they probably get four, because there's four surrounding empires to give them to hand one over. And the LDR would probably be a little bit more friendly towards the Lumen Empire because they'd be afraid of the Klingons trying to conquer them. So there is actually accounting for that in the Captain's Log 38 scenario. So that would basically apply here as well. They wouldn't be quite as neutral as they were historically.
Hmm.
But yeah, long story short, you're basically looking at Klingon plus Carnovan versus Zinti, Liren, and Hydran, possibly with a bit of LDR thrown in for a good measure. And you wouldn't need much in the way of new SSDs. You'd need a couple of those Maulers for the Carnivans and maybe an early Dreadnought for the Carnivans because they're still missing one. But aside from that, it's almost entirely functional using ships that already exist in the game. Oh, and also those fighters for the Lyrans, I should say. But yeah, how does that sound?
Sounds good. Okay.
Because it definitely would be interesting to see, in terms of the tactics, how the Klingon and Carnivan fleets would function together. Because, you know, disruptor cannons that much different from a regular disruptor bolt, and the death bolt's a little bit different to a drone, and Carnivans have the heel nipper, and, but they're a little bit less agile because they're only turn mode C instead of B. So it'd be curious to see, like, how you'd finesse that, and whether it would actually be more or less effective against the Kazintis or the Lyrans.
True. Don't mind me. Okay. Hopefully that'll help. One person on Twitch is saying that Gary's voice is a little low, and I did my best to try to increase the sound. He said it's better. I'm sure it's not perfect.
Oh, sorry about that.
Oh, it's not you. I need to look to see if there's a way to amplify things and actually check out volume levels and things like that when it comes to Twitch to a certain degree. I know there's only so much I can control on that side. And of course we don't want it to be maxed out, because then what you do is you're gonna start getting buzzing, or basically, you're gonna I forget what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna be cut. You're gonna cut off. I think it's a cut off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway,
a better way of equalizing the sound, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they can hear me fine, they just have a hard time hearing you. That's all.
Okay. All right. So yeah, that's option one for a new timeline, I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then option two is actually pretty similar, except the main difference would be that you would actually not use this map. You would use the standard map, but you would have the Carnivans in the wind cluster, like in Module C6, the other Module C6 timeline. But you would actually have the Klingons allied with those Carnivans. So the map would look initially like the historical map by the start of another Five Powers War, but this, or a general war, rather, even. But this time, the Klingons would still attack the border provinces, while the Carnivans would be bursting out of the wind cluster to try to seize territory as well. So there'd be no winds, like no usurper, rather, no wind navy, and no cluster cartel. There'd probably still be Orions in the area. But you'd be basically trying to, because you have the Module C6 rulebook PDF on there, do you?
I think so. Let me check.
Because
Yeah, Module C6, I got it. Rulebook?
Yeah, so if you go there, rulebook.
Okay.
There's a page early in the book that shows a couple of the Carnivan maps. So the map for the Carnivan Empire is smaller than the one that you have in Captain's Log 51. It's not as, and also the province borders for the Lyrans are kind of weird on that one, so the one in CL51 is more authoritative for that. But the other map that shows on that same page in C6 shows the Carnivan cluster, Carnivan timeline.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Got the one with the Paravians. Ooh, wait a minute. Ah, here it is. Then we have.
Yeah, you see the big yellow splotch that's surrounding the wind cluster there?
Yeah. Yeah.
So in the timeline, in that alternate timeline that's in Module C6, the Carnivons are fighting all of the surrounding empires.
Right.
So they're taking territory from the Klingons and the Lyrensen. Well, at this point, the Kzinti's haven't taken that territory back. So they're basically taking the Kzinti territory from the Lyrensen Klingons anyway.
Right.
But long story short is that map is basically showing what the Carnivons have been able to fortify by the end of the General War in that timeline.
Wow.
And the Kzinti's are basically out of the picture in that timeline as well. So they only barely hold the territory that's around the Kzinti homeworld, which is basically kind of like a Federation protectorate at this point. But most of the rest of Kzinti space is still held by the Klingons. But there's a big chunk of Lyran space in particular that ends right up to the border of the Lyran home system, which is under Carnivon control.
Wow. That would be... Now that, to me, would be quite interesting. And, I mean, that obviously, that would be a much bigger of a power balance change than the other one, where the Carnivons basically just take over some of the Lyran territory and the wind cluster stays intact. And therefore, the Carnivons have a border with the Kzinti, but they're not nearly as powerful as, obviously, in this case, they were... quite a bit powerful. That my question. When it comes to the development of their weapons, like the Heel Nipper and things like that, I'm assuming that continues on. I forget. Did they actually add? I think they added, you know, those, you know, if the Carnivon had survived, that it would actually have, they would have developed their weapons this much. You know, it would have been better in this case. You know, these are some of the improvements that we would have seen. Correct?
Yeah, the rules for the actual ships and the weapons are the same in both of the Module C6 timelines. So the disruptor cannons get to overload. And death bolts get faster, and Heel Nippers, I think they have an extended range mode or something. So yeah, basically the rules that are in Module C6 that apply to the Carnivon weapons, they apply, and also any plus refits, like upgrading Phaser 2s to Phaser 1s, that sort of thing, they apply the same either way.
Okay.
So, but strategically, what I was thinking here is that the Carnivons of the cluster still burst out, but they're only attacking the Lyrans and Kzintis. They're actually allied with the Klingons, or in a coalition with the Klingons, rather. So basically, if you're looking at the way the map is there, some of the territory runs along the former neutral zone, so it's not no skin off the Klingon's nose. But some of the other territory does still, even if you give the Klingons some of those hexes, the provinces, outright, other ones kind of overlap with pre-war Klingon board territory. So maybe those would go to the Klingons too. That's part, maybe that could be part of the deal that the two sides strike, is that... one empire, depending on what the balance of power is, like as the war progresses, one side or the other basically shifts things around to try to make sure that no pre-war territory is lost by the Klingons.
Hmm.
But I'd imagine that in this time, in this version of events, it would actually be maybe the full extent of the Carnivon territory that's on the map out of the cluster might not even be as big as you see there, because if the Kzintis and Lyrans are forewarned, so to speak, as in like there's like two bursts out instead of just one, and also if, you know, depending on the balance, like with the Hydrans thrown in and so on, maybe the Carnivons aren't quite as successful as you see there, but they're still fairly successful in terms of having a new on-map territory that they've controlled.
Right. Well, that's why I bring up the whole thing about the improvements of the weapons, not that we need to go through the specifics and so forth. Just that in my mind is that's kind of an important part of the development of the empire, because of, you know, if you just say, oh, well, they were able to take territory, well, their weapons have to be improved enough to really, push home that, yes, these weapons that were kind of weak when they were in, you know, younger, you know, that they kind of grew up and became, the weapons and the real tactics that could use with it could actually grow the empire, versus we're just saying, you know, that they were able to take territory, we just don't know how, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, even in the historical timeline, the Carnivon earlier ships are still decent. But the issue is not so much the ships themselves. It's more that on the Federation and Empire scale of things, the historical Carnivons were never able to, because they were basically ruled as about 8 to 12 different hordes, but they were never able to coalesce into a single empire. So
right.
No matter how good the ships were, the Leyrans and Kzintis were able to destroy one horde at a time, and the others wouldn't help until it was too late. So although there is a rumor that over in the Sargasso region of the galaxy, there might be a Carnivon escapee faction there or something. But of course, if we are assuming that the Carnivons are allied with the Klingons, then yes, that would mean they'd get Maulers at least, which would be handy if they're attacking Leyran or Kzinti star bases. So,
yeah, especially
in terms of actual weapon difference, that would be a change, yes.
Right, and as you pointed out, before, if the Carnivon actually became an ally of the Klingons, the question would be then, would the territory actually look like what it is on in the map in Module C6, where the Carnivon actually is taking Klingon territory? Would the Klingons actually let them take, you know, keep the territory? My guess would be no. They have to at least give back some of that territory, not all of it. I guess at least some of it.
Well, I would just say that you just go through those provinces and just say that those stay in Klingon hands, or the ones that straddle the old border, that the Klingons are the ones who take them over rather than the Carnivons. So you're still basically finessing it in a way that you don't have to make too many major changes to the map in order to make sure that the Klingons get their share of the coalition.
Right. Right. Because I think that, you know, if they're in a coalition, you know, that's one thing they would want, you know.
Now, in terms of the technology, most of the other details would be the same as in the previous timeline.
Right.
So, again, Paladine fighters for the Leyrans, maybe, or that sort of thing. No Maulers for the Leyrans and so on. The main difference is that there's no War of Return, because no fish ships are ever built, because the Usurper is dead. So,
right.
There's the Wind faction basically just never appears.
Well, that's like,
the Carnivons pretty much take their place.
So that means that the Usurper dies.
Yep, because even in Module C6, in the Cluster Carnivon timeline, the Carnivons are in the cluster before he arrives.
Right.
So by the time he flees in there, he's killed right away.
Right. Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. So his faction preempted, gone entirely. So no fish ships and no Win Orions. Maybe there's some Orion pirate ships in the region, but they don't have access to the cluster as a safe haven.
Right, because the cluster is now the actual capital of the Carnivons.
That's correct.
So yeah,
and one other thing as well is that in the FNE preview for the Wind Cluster, one thing is that there's a bunch of planets that are in the Wind Cluster, but their economic value is not as big as you'd think, because the Winds still have an issue of population. They don't have that many people living in there to exploit these planets.
Right.
But if you've got the Carnivons, like with a larger, getting in earlier and having a larger population base to start with, they can fully exploit those provinces. So they're probably richer in terms of the economic output than even the Winds would be. And that's really bad news for the Kzintis and Leyrans afterwards, because how are they going to get rid of it? Because if a capital is on the map, you can invade it. And then maybe if they have an off-map area, they can go hide in it. But if the Carnivons keep their home fleet behind the Wind Cluster, how are you going to stop them? Like, because you know, even attacking the regular winds is a pain because your ships are crippled when they pass through the radiation zone.
Right,
but
right.
Instead of having a bunch of freighters and the occasional Orion ship, whatever, you've got like a full Carnivon battle fleet waiting for you. So how would you deal with that? So the best you could do is to try to push them back to the wing cluster, because ironically, the Carnivons can't deploy all of their ships outside the cluster, because if they do, the Klingons might backstab them and try to steal the cluster for themselves.
Right.
So the Carnivons have that careful balancing act to play where they have to keep some of their ships in the cluster, if only to keep the Klingons honest. But they have to deploy enough of their ships so that they can actually hold territory that they're taking from the Lyrans and Xentis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not quite as much of a gotcha as you'd think. There's still a bit of F&E strategy required in order to try to make things work.
Understood. To me, the one thing that's having the capital within the wind cluster itself is problematic in that, in my mind, you have to keep two separate fleets of ships. One fleet of ships that basically is outside the cluster, you know, uh-huh. that plays guard. In that, when you want to send a bunch of the fleet outside of the capital, you know, they need to come out and know that they're not going to be bushwhacked, you know, uh-huh. because they're going to have deal with the effects of the wind cluster themselves coming out of the wind cluster, you know.
Well, usually it's said that the cluster is big enough that it's difficult for anybody to patrol all of it, that there's usually parts that you can escape out of, and by the time someone finds you, then you're already home dry. So it's not impossible, because there are scenarios that do have ships that get caught when they try to come out of the cluster, but it's not nearly as risky as trying to go into the cluster, because the winds historically, or the Carnivons in this timeline, are able to respond a lot more quickly. Like they can keep tabs of you and pounce on you as soon as you're in.
Right.
Whereas if it's the other way around, when you're in open space, it's much trickier to build up that kind of critical mass needed to patrol the outside of it effectively.
Right.
Yeah. Space is kind of big, so there's that.
Yep. There it is. It is.
You know, another possibility uh-huh. could also be that you could also have like the old cliche of the hidden base, where they come out of the wind cluster, they go right to the hidden base. You know, that might be like more of an Orion kind of thing. Just saying.
Mm-hmm.
But they could probably arrange.
Well, the Orions, you know, I guess they would like have some. The Orions do have bases that they try to keep out of, you know, the woods and stuff. Because in the historical timeline, yes, the Cluster Cartel would need to account for being able to slip their ships through the radiation shell without the surrounding Empire spotting them. So they seem to be able to get away with it more often than not. But it's, I guess, a different story, because the Orion ships are designed to be hard to find, whereas with Carnivon ships, they're you're pretty much going to know about it, I guess, if they want to. They're harder to hide, rather. But yes, the Carnivons, it would be more important for them to try to control a zone of territory surrounding the cluster to make it easier for reinforcements to emerge out of it. But then also that would mean that the Xentis and Lyrans would be that much more motivated to, you know, push them back to, as close to the shell as possible.
So I have a question for Paul before we run out of time tonight.
Sure.
Okay, you won your round in the 500-point tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you know who your next opponent is now?
Not yet.
So the other two, the potential fights aren't quite done yet.
Correct. To me, I know that either I'm going to be fighting, I think I mentioned this last week, but either I'm going to be fighting the Romulan with the old ships, you know, with the King Eagles and Battle Hawks, or I'm going to be dealing with Justin's fleet with a frigate scout and the BC I forget which one. I was going to say J, but I'm pretty sure it's not J because I think J's the Jersey. And I know it wasn't the Jersey one. Oh, BCF. That was it. The one that has the plasma and the drones. And some other ships. But basically the important fact was that he had a scout. And I really was hoping that Justin would be knocked out in that fight just because of I think, you know, fighting against a fleet with a scout is going to be a little more difficult. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. But on the other hand, that's, what, 4 less photons?
That's true. He has a much less photon heavy. His is more drones.
And which... He doesn't have the extra couple of photons on the big ship there.
Right.
So.
But then he doesn't have to worry about shock. Capture scouts. Nah, oh, that's true. That I actually, I'd love to do that. And Lord knows I would love to have that happen. And if I could capture it and take it on to the next round, I think that'd be kind of cool. It'd be kind of also unbalanced, you know. I understand why they wouldn't want that. I'm not. Don't mind me. I'm right now. I'm checking the board, and I did not see, other than Peter, I don't see any updates from other people. Oh, that's a good question. I'd have to look at the rules. Okay, yeah. Okay, so... Yeah.
I think the handy thing about the shield crackers is that they block, I think it's specific general reinforcement on the impulse that they're used. So if you get within transporter range, use the shield crackers to knock down the shield, then it's that much harder for him to single point reinforce so that he can stop to try to stop you from using all those transporters that you have on your ships.
Mm-hmm.
And once, even if you can't use the scout, the fact that you've taken it out of his hands means that he has that much weaker of an EW coverage over the rest of his squadron.
Can you actually do that? Can you capture ships in this and keep them and use them for the
next
turn?
No, I wish you. Okay. As I said, that kind of
blows out the whole 500 point thing if that's the case.
Right, exactly. That's the reason why you can't. Okay.
Well, the capture
but
would
you're
still
locked
be good
in with
the,
your.
For the rest of
oh, night. Crap.
Once you've done your thing, though, you can't like shift your 500 points around, right? You can't like trade out ships for different ships.
No, you can't change ships in between rounds.
So you're basically stuck.
The only thing you can modify is your commander's options between rounds. Darn. Looks like Justin destroyed him. There's a Jeff Clark just mentioned that. Oh yeah, okay. Okay, sounds good. I will roll for self-destruct. Dial to see the Battle Hulk is captured or destroyed. This is when what was this was. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm just looking.
Oh yeah, because the Eagle ships have those nuclear space mines, so
yeah,
easier for them to self-destruct, I think.
Yeah, Justin mentioned. Okay, end of turn 4. This is turn 4. Fed moves are moving away. BCF has photons. DDL with plasma coming online turn 5. Feds plan to swing back around to destroy the remaining King Eagle and capture the burning wreck of the Battlehawk Plus, and also the almost crippled King Eagle and the BHB might be able to disengage. That's how bad it is. So to say the very least, the Feds beat the Romulans, and I'm going to get my butt kicked. I'm willing to bet. Well, I'm just thinking about that stupid scout.
Positive outlook.
Yeah.
Positive. You got a lot of time to plan and overthink your strategy.
Can we say suicide run for the scout?
Well, the flip side of that is maybe you've got all those... you could blow something else up.
Yep. True.
Here's the thing, Paul. Why don't you check and see what is the EW shift when it comes to transporter operations? Because if you're still able to board somebody, even if it's a difficult EW shift, then that actually puts the onus on capturing the scout early so that your actual weapons fire against the remaining ships will be that much more effective.
That is true. I was going to say... Oh, some hit and run raids would be nice, but I don't think
you just take out his sensors.
Right, that's what I'm...
or his special sensors.
The special sensors, yes.
That would effectively remove him from it. But on the other hand, if you're just angling for that, what other opportunities would you miss? I mean, if you're going to get his shield downward enough to do hit and run raids, just blow him up.
Right, agreed.
Make it go boom.
Well, the only thing is that you, if you want to save more of your phasers for shooting down drones and plasma torpedoes, then if the shield is down, then the Marines are a comparatively cheaper way of getting what you want.
Oh yeah, but the Marines aspect of it are easily beaten. All he has to do is turn away, take that down.
Well, that's
shield
what I'm saying
from,
is that. If he's able to get the boarding parties over in the same impulse that he used the shield crackers, then it'll be that much harder for him to try and reinforce that shield. Because if you have, like, you've got four ships, so it's ships, and if you basically have the two of them focused on a shield facing each, then you can basically crack down those shields and beam Marines through both of them. And then... Yeah. You're basically overwhelming his crew because Federation ships don't have that great number of boarding parties to start with. And so you'd probably be able to go a long way towards capturing that ship, which was in just one battle pass.
And
that basically gives you options. Otherwise,
he has to survive getting into transporter range to do that successfully. And present a down shield for multiple ships. So it's dicey. It's possible. I really think that it's more of a afterthought to more of a opportunity thing for him than a direct and immediate strategy. So yeah. Maybe the dice will be nicer to him than last time. Paul whiffed a lot on that first battle pass.
Oh, no kidding. I had a hard time getting my particle cannons to hit.
Yeah.
And then, of course, getting the shield crackers to hit, that was a hard thing, too. I think I maybe hit with two. It's just annoying. In some cases, when it comes to particle cannons, yes, I roll pretty much average. But I need to be rolling better than average here.
Or at least average.
Yeah.
If you'd gone at least average on...
Oh, the other thing as well is...
it would have been a quicker game.
Yep.
But yeah.
If you're dropping the shield to try and do transporter raids, then you could also use those that same shield facing to use to plant T bombs in the path of any drones coming in. It won't help you with the plasma torpedoes from the BCF, but if any drones get caught up in it, then that makes it that much, either they'll get rid of them outright, or, you know, if not, then at least you've reduced the number of phasers that you need to try to shoot them down.
True.
Yeah. I foresee many minefields being thrown out by Paul.
Yeah. Oh, I agree there. That's the one thing that I didn't put in mind in the last game. Of course, I'm not sure how that would be effective in the last game, just because of...
Trivia question.
Yes.
If you drop it without using the transporter, is it still not hidden?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. Hidden mines are just something of beauty. But when they go boom. Now, the one thing that I don't think my opponent thought of, I've got enough experience with using T-bombs more than most, just because I play the Andromedans in the tournament, and they're one of the few, they're the only ship that actually has a T-bomb.
No, they're not. The Romulan has
it. Yeah, but that's in place of a nuclear space mine. They've got a little itty-bitty mine. But given that, the one thing that it was transporters, which can be very effective, is pseudo transporter bombs. If you're trying against your opponent's ship you're trying to use that as terrain against your opponent. Because the question is it okay? The opponent has to ask, hey, is this real or is this fake? Or which one is real, which one is fake? And then guess.
Yeah, the whole shell game.
Yep. And to me, I think T-bombs are harder to guess than plasma. Because plasma, real versus pseudo, when it comes to tournament play anyway, is that a lot of times you can know, or at least guess, can't know, but you can guess, if your opponent is launching a pseudo or a real torpedo just by knowing the player, you know. Overall, that usually works.
Well, Paul.
It's never 100%. Yes.
Well, guess what, Paul? If they let the Paravians into the next tournament, all their quantum wave torpedoes are real.
True. But one step at a time. One step at a time. Let's get through this one first. Make sure that we have enough people and we have enough interest for the next one. And obviously try to take away from this current 500 BPV tournament anything that we learned for the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Is there things that we have to adjust, things we have to modify? Do we need to do something like the Federation Commander game did in our tournament games? The online Federation Commander tournament game, I know I brought this up multiple times, which is the whole idea of a multiplier, i.e., even though it's a very big fishbowl, and it is a very big fishbowl, it's still a fishbowl. For the most part, if you leave the map, then the ship is either disengaged or destroyed. So it matters for victory points. So it's dealt with a little bit versus the Federation Commander, where it actually it's truly a fishbowl. You hit the wall and you stop dead, that kind of thing. But with that multiplier, some ships are worth more because of the fishbowl. Some ships are worth less because of the fishbowl. I feel like that when it came to Federation Commander and that tournament, that worked out quite well. So I would think that might happen in the future if we keep doing this enough times where, we still have, we should, because it's still a fishbowl, we might actually have to give, like, and maybe the plasma gets additional 10 or 20%. When it comes to people with drones, okay, they instead of having it worth 500 points, you only have 475. Something like that, which those kind of adjustments to make it even overall.
Although it,
because come on, let's be honest.
I do think that.
What's that?
I do think it'd be interesting to do a variant of the tournament that's set in Y-150, so everyone's using middle-tier ships.
True. But the one thing I was going to just point out is, I think to most people, it's obvious. Trying to boil the capabilities of a ship down to a single number is kind of ludicrous. Because certain weapons are, you know, they cancel out each other. Certain weapons, you know, they don't. Like case of a Hydran, which with Hellbores versus a Lyran with ESGs. You know, a lot of times that those ESGs can cancel out the Hellbores. Versus, you know, let's say a Federation, force against a Hydran force, So. Anyhow, I think we're going to wrap it up with that chasing rabbits. So anyway, Jerry, it was wonderful having you around and talking about Ephanese and the Carnivon. So you have a good night.
Thank you. I still have four more timelines to go through. So if I manage to call in the not too distant future, hopefully we can try to take one or two of them off, if you like.
Okay, that'd be great. That'd be great. Okay, good.
Excellent. And Beth.
Sorry, what was that? I muted you. Sorry.
I was just saying best of luck in your next round.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Doug. Now you didn't have much to say tonight, but that's fine. Sometimes it's better to be quiet.
Yar.
Darn.
There be that. Not a lot to say there. But, again, we do have Gamers of Summer coming up eventually.
Yes, we do. I know it's gonna be after summer's over, but
it is not over.
True, it's Labor Day weekend.
It's Labor Day weekend. It's pretty much gonna be about one of the last gaming events of its kind for the summer. Because summer ends a week or two afterwards, so there you go. Or shortly afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be cake on Saturday.
I'll make sure I'm there Saturday. Okay.
All right. Yeah, I don't have much tonight. There's that. Sometime either tonight or tomorrow, I'll be throwing a poster selection thing for some voting up on the Gamers of South Central PA convention page.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's the same informational poster, but there's like six different colorized versions of it. So I'm just going to ask people for their input on which one they like, and then I'll be able to take either, a couple of them or one type and do it as a four poster that can be cut up into four pieces and put out as four smaller, like little things for bulletin boards and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically that. That's our big thing. If you want, you can send me your information for what you want to run, or a generic general kind of thing. And then if you have something really specific you want to plan on doing, then mm-hmm. there's that.
Well, I still like to do that nice big fleet battle. I want to see if I can get someone to sign up for it.
Now, by big fleet battle, little more specific, you mean like an SFB fight, or do you mean like a Armada fight? Starmada. Okay. SFB.
Probably SFB. If the person wants to play Stormata, hey, I have to do that, and that possibly could be done faster.
Yep. So, but no, it was just, if you want to send me like a thing, I'll put it up on the events page. It's never too early to put events there, especially once I say things like, hey, look, the event's scheduled. Right. Because it is scheduled. I did make a Facebook event for it, and the website itself is up. And I'm not going to open up the badge registration part until April. But we are getting that close. It's almost April now.
Awesome.
So, yay.
Yay.
Amazing how time just kind of accelerates on the going past faster thing as you get older. So.
Yep. Understood. Okay, well.
Go off on the old man rant of when I was an 18-year-old private in the Army, time took forever to pass.
Doug?
Them years seem like centuries. Yada, yada, yada. Okay.
Get off my lawn.
Exactly.
You have a good night.
You too. Thank you for having me on, Paul.
You're welcome. Okay. So. Oh. Nice little evening discussion about Epiphany and the Cardamon's alternate histories, which is always interesting, and got a little introduction there in the games. It looks like I'll be playing against Justin, which I really don't look forward to, but I will probably see how well I do. See if I can, if I'll do maybe better in overall fleet tactics this time around. So, with that. I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.